Wherever you go, whatever you do,
stop.
I will
do you want people
be
to listen
right
to this?
Here waiting for you.
Serious, stop.
Whatever it takes.
Stop.
Or how my heart breaks.
Stop.
I will be right here waiting for Charles Barkley.
That song, well, I didn't really like. Who sang it for real? Bryan Adams?
No. That was... Waits, wasn't it a Waits? Like a
Richard Marx.
Richard Marx. Thank you, Sim. Thank you, Sim.
Richard Marx. I didn't like it when Richard Marx sang it, and I sure as hell don't like it when you sing it. And we're trying to get listeners. We're still growing, and we're trying.
It actually connects with daddy issues because that song reminds me of my dad. Like, for real.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. I don't know if I heard it with him or just the lyrics themselves. I'll be right here waiting for you, like, dad, where are you type shit. I don't know, but it reminds me of my father. But that's not why I sang it. I was trying to sort of segue into we're waiting for Charles Barkley to come on the line here, and I was using that song, you know, to get that point across. And then it got deep. And then it got emotional, and it got deep, and now I'm talking about my dad again, and I don't know. You know, it's just like, it's hard.
I know.
Man.
It's okay. You're going to be okay. Just lay down and put a cold compress on your forehead. You'll be good. I know one thing about you, and that is that when Charles Barkley is on this call, you will at some point work him for Nike shoes.
Without a doubt. Well, yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about that. I'm no joke, but I don't know. I have to find an angle.
I just don't understand what the deal is. It's like,
I love sneakers. They're cool. They make me feel good. You know, the way I dress now is from bottom up. So I'll pick my shoe, whatever sneaker I'm going to be wearing, and then I move to the sock, then the pant, then the undies, because I wear my underwear over my pants, and then a shirt. You know, I worked from the bottom up.
It's so funny because knowing you for the years that I've known you, I would say you spend about no time on wardrobe. I don't think you could care less about what you're wearing. I get the shoes part,
don't.
But the rest of it, you look, most of the time, you look disheveled and dirty.
Things have changed, Joe. I haven't seen you in person in a minute. I've got a whole new style now, you know. I'm shifting. I'm changing. I'm finally maturing, really, becoming a man. So
at the age of 43, you finally have started to plan out your looks?
Yeah.
Are you trying to match your clothing to whatever colors are in the shoes? Are you in like a boy band or what is that? I just don't know anybody that's 43 that does that.
Oh, whoever listens to this, leave comments about your sneaker game. I guarantee we get a lot of people who love the sneaker game.
So if you have sneakers that have green and yellow in them.
Yeah.
You're wearing
like
green
Ducks.
And yellow? Yeah. Are you wearing green and yellow in your clothing?
Not necessarily. Sometimes that, like, pop on the foot, boom. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, everything looks normal. Then, ba-bow! Like, the foot just explodes, and people are like, oh, wow, look at those kicks. Those are awesome shoes. Yeah. I just posted something right now. If you look on your Instagram, you'll see the shoes that I was wearing today. Oh, really?
I'm not on Instagram anymore. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I have a publicist.
Why?
I can push stuff to publicists to put stuff out on Instagram, and maybe I'll dip my toe into the Twitter water every once in a while, but really kind of sick of that too. I don't know. I find myself on my phone too much. I get awful looks from my wife. I'm checked out with my boys if I'm on my phone looking at Twitter. So why not just take it off my phone? It's just stupid.
No, I know. I know. I get it. People get in those like Instagram holes. Instead of a K hole, you're in like an I hole. You know, I mean, they just go, you get so deep. I don't really spend a lot of time on Instagram. I went off it for a long time, and now I'm back in just a little bit, pretty much for my sneakers.
Is this a way
and
for
to
you?
Promote daddy issues, by the way. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, and I'm promoting on Instagram. I just am not on there like checking everybody's stupid duck lips pictures out.
Yeah, I don't do the feeds much.
Filtered crap and hashtag no filter and all that stupid stuff. I don't care.
I know.
I got enough stuff.
Hashtag no filter was a long time ago. So you've been off for maybe 2 years, I guess.
No, you're 2 weeks.
I know that. Yeah, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you that you're concentrating more on your family than you are on social media. I think that's important, Joe. I think it's very important.
I just don't know what the plus is if you just sit on that all day. I mean, I'm not a Kardashian. I'm not 21. Why am I looking at pictures that I don't care about? Why do I care?
You've gotten, in the last couple of weeks, you've gotten a little older and like curmudgeonly. You're just a little bit more, I don't know what's going on with you, dude. You know, our text exchanges have been a little fiery. You're just cranky. You're like a cranky old man all of a sudden. What's happening?
You're going to have to weather that storm. I'll come back around. I'm cranky. I'm tired. That's it. I'm tired. I'm fatigued.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't have it. I don't have any energy. I don't have any juice. That's why I'm glad we got Barkley coming on.
I know, me too.
Because I could listen to him talk about anything.
I love Charles, man. We've known him for a minute. We play golf at the American Century in Tahoe, and he just holds court there. And he's just he's the most fair, you know, just sweet man that I know. He's just a good-hearted person. I can't wait to hear about his story.
And he likes to have fun, and he likes to include people in on that fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to talk to him.
Yeah,
so let's go.
He is. What timing, Joe? If you may be cranky, but you got timing. There's Chuck right now.
Hey, Chuck.
What up, brothers?
Oh, sure.
What's up, Oliver?
What's up, man? How are you?
Bored as fuck.
Why do you think we're doing this podcast, man? This is to get rid of some boredom.
I've been stuck on the fucking couch since fucking March.
Oh God. Yeah, but are you getting out and about though, at least safely or no?
Well, everything's still closed. I mean, yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, everything's still closed. I live in Philadelphia during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here like 3 days and everything's fucking closed. So I'm going back to Arizona in the next couple of days because at least I can play golf every day and I got a gym at my house.
I know, but what about American Century? You going to go?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely doing that. That's 2 weeks. Actually, 2 weeks from today.
That's right.
But just know this, Charles. The only reason why Oliver asked that is because he's bitter that two of the three of the people on this call are going to the American Century tournament.
I don't know what happened. I got invited every single year as one of the sort of few actors. And then all of a sudden, I don't know, man. I don't know if I missed too many of those Wednesday meetings or something, but I got booted.
No, you know what happened? And that's actually been a big deal because there's guys who've been going to the tournament for like 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody started coming, so they just fucking like cutting people. And a lot of the guys are bitter because a lot of guys went like the first 25 years and they can't get invited back anymore.
I know.
Yeah. I know.
Whatever.
Maybe it's just a reflection on your career.
Getting guys this year.
I don't know, man. Maybe I have to do something bigger and better in my life. Who knows?
I mean, if you were in Titanic, you'd be going every year.
If I was in Titanic,
you wouldn't be doing this podcast.
Titanic, hey, Buck. If he was in Titanic, he wouldn't be fucking hanging out with us.
There is no doubt about that.
Not a chance. Not a chance, man.
Yeah. I mean, I know you. The one thing that I have always said about you, Charles, is While I talk about Twitter hate and all the stuff I get, and I try to act like it doesn't bother me, I genuinely feel that you're on the short list, and it's really short, of people who don't care what is said about them and don't care. You're going to speak your mind. You're going to say what's there. You're going to be true to yourself, and whatever happens after that happens. There are so few people walking the planet, walking this country, that are in that category. Have you always been that way? Am I reading that right? Do you truly not care what's said about you or how people react to what you say?
I don't, and I learned that in Philadelphia. I got to Philadelphia in 84, and so the first couple of years, nobody talked to me because they were talking to Dr. J and Moses and Maurice Cheeks and those guys. So by 86, at the end of my second year, I was starting to become a star. And I was learning, and Dr. J was helping me along the way. And I said, Doc, I don't know what to say. He says, it doesn't matter what you say. Half these people going to like it, and half people going to dislike it. Mm. And I had to learn that. I mean, that was very difficult for me to realize no matter what you say, you're in a bad situation because people actually think you give a fuck who win these games. Like, mm-hmm. I know you, it ain't like I get extra money. You're like, no, I'm gonna just do my job. But the fans are like this. Tell me my favorite player is great. Tell me my favorite team is really, really good. And then we're golden. You can't tell me my favorite player got any flaws. You can't tell me my team sucks or I'm going to hate your ass. And that's the business we are in, Buck. And ain't nothing, like, it doesn't matter what you say. They hear what they want to hear.
Mm. Well, the funniest thing, Oliver, I don't know if you were there this year. I think this was the year Michelle came out. And so I bring Michelle. I'm trying to impress her. She comes out to Tahoe to this golf tournament. And Charles is doing his thing at night, the whole bar. He owns the bar. Everybody loves everything Charles does. And he's like, get up on stage, man. Get up on stage. I'm like, nah, I've already taken enough shit in this casino from all these Northern California people. You hate the Giants. You hate the 40. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. I don't hate them. Yeah, and then they're fine. But I get up on stage. Now there's a crowd down there, and they start booing me. Meanwhile, the girl I'm dating's right there. I'm like, oh, this is great. Charles walks out with the microphone. He goes, hey, stop. Why are you booing this guy? He doesn't hate your team. And there was one guy who kept going, and you stopped, Charles, and you went, you know what your problem is out there booing my friend? You're ugly. You're ugly. You're an ugly person. Look at that guy. He's ugly. And then everybody laughed and nobody gave a shit anymore. I was like, this guy, where has Charles been all my life? I need to walk around the world with Charles Barkley because he just goes, shut up, and here's what's going on.
But Charles, is this who you have been from the get-go, from when you were born? Or was this something that Dr. J basically said, look, be yourself, do what you're going to do? Or have you always been outspoken and not giving a shit what people think? Because like Kurt, my dad, that's who he is. He doesn't give a fuck what people think about him. And it's so liberating. I wish I had even a piece of that.
Well, number one, with the career he's had, he really shouldn't give a shit what other people think. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's had one of the greatest careers, and I'm not saying that because I'm on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be that successful for that many years,
yeah,
number one, you know what you're doing, and you're very talented. I had to learn. Everybody has to learn to be in the limelight. There's nothing anybody can tell you. There's nobody that can prepare you for it. Like, it's a great thing. It's a crazy thing. It sucks at times. It's amazing. I mean, it in the big picture, it's pretty awesome not to have a real job, as I say. Mm-hmm. But, man, it is not easy. I mean, you see guys crash and burn every week on TV. Mm-hmm. Like, this thing, like, every little mistake, especially now in the social media and the Twitter age where they're trying to get you all the time, any little mistake you make is just crazy. But I had to learn. But like I say, the hardest thing for me, Oliver, was to learn, Charles, it don't matter what you say. Half these people going to like you and half of them going to hate you. Now, that was difficult for me because I'm from a small town in Alabama. And I think deep down, everybody wants to be liked. But you have to ask yourself, why does that person not like you? And it's always bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like Buck just said, you hate the 49ers. You hate the Giants. Like, man, I don't give a rat's ass who wins these games. I tell people, you know what I want? The season to be over so I can play golf every day and fish. I tell people, they're like, because my friends are like, dude, you care? I'm like, yeah, I care because I want this shit to be over.
Yeah.
I love my job. I get paid to watch the greatest athletes in the world do their thing. But like, I want it to be over so I can play golf and fish every day. That's what I want more than anything. I do not care who wins. I'm not watching no championship parades. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to call the guys who lost and console them. If they need me, I'm going to be on the golf course. I'm going to be fishing somewhere. That's all I care about.
And what about you, that the campaign, the Nike campaign? I'm not a role model. Was that your concept?
Yeah, that's probably the thing I'm most proud of today. You know, because all of us, so this is what was happening. I went to Nike, I think it was like 89 when I did that commercial. And I said, hey, I got this idea for a commercial. And I know it's going to be controversial, but it's going to be a good talking point conversation. And they said, you're out of your fucking mind to make this commercial. I said, you're going to get killed by the public, by the press. I said, first of all, I'm a big boy. I can handle criticism. I said, but let me tell you what's happening. So when I'm going to speak, and you know, a lot of players go speak at schools. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that the white schools, when I said, well, how many of y'all want to, and I'm talking, I took this survey for like four or five years before I went to Nike with the commercial. I said, well, how many of you, what do you guys want to do for a living? And when I went to a white school, like only like 5% of the kids raised their hand saying they want to play sports. And these white kids are male, like, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be an engineer, a teacher, fireman, policeman. So then when I would go to the predominantly black school or black school, every kid raised their hand. And I'm like, yo, man, don't you think about being a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, teacher, fireman, policeman, something like that, going to service? And they're like, no, we're going to make it in the NFL. We're going to make it in the NBA. Or we're going to be a rapper. I'm like, man, that's like hitting a lottery. So that's how I came up with the concept. And it was really cool. When Nike said, man, we will give you some credit. We were wrong. Because 90% of the letters they got were positive. Mm-hmm. Listen, I know athletes are somewhat role models, but listen, I get so frustrated when every black kid thinks the only way they can be successful mm-hmm. is through athletics and entertainment.
What if you went to those schools today again, do you think that would be different? Do you think those hands would still be raised?
Well, I think we still have a problem. We're the only FA group that don't value education. You know, most ethnic groups, number one thing, one of the reasons I give a lot of money to historically black colleges is I never talk to them about sports. I just gave $4 million to four historically black colleges. When I meet with the students, I say, hey, you can't ask me no sports questions. Mm-hmm. You can't ask me any sports questions. Now, if you want to talk how you can be doctors, lawyers, engineers, accountants, things like that, I will put you in contact with people who can be mentors and things like that. But I'm not going to put you in contact with Michael Jordan that you think you're going to make it to the NBA mm-hmm. when you're like 5'6" and your mm-hmm. mom and dad like 5'8". You're not going to make it to the NBA. Right.
But that's honest by you. What I love about you is you know no enemies. I feel like everybody that comes into your path, if they're a good person, meaning well, you're there to help. You're there to be friendly. You're there to, I find you as one of the most accessible guys to the average person who people have seen in the NBA finals, who's in the Hall of Fame, who's one of the 50 greatest players in the history of the NBA. And you don't ever act like it. Yeah. And $4 million. Where's that story? I haven't read that story. Why is that not out there?
Well, they're going to wait till I throw somebody through a window again. That's, you know, that's actually the negative thing about our business. Like, we don't cover good stories anymore. We're trying to get clickbait. Any one of us, either one of you two or me doing thing wrong, it's going to be front page news. And people, that's just and it's really unfortunate. That's the world we live in today. Negativity gets everybody attention. And it's really unfortunate and it's really sad because everybody's trying to get their piece noticed because there's so much competition out here on television and things like that. The best way to get people's attention is to come up with something negative, mm-hmm. and then people they're gonna go right to that story. And the thing you know that's gonna happen, like I tell any of my friends, when you screw up and you become the news for like a 24 or 48 hour cycle, I said you just gotta be patient and rat it out and get beat to death, mm-hmm. and then something else is gonna happen.
Right. Because I mean, look at Tiger. You know what I mean? Like a Tiger for me, it's just interesting that you talk about. We're talking about this role model situation, right? Yeah. Tiger, I've been a huge fan of Tiger for a long, long, long time. The thing is, when that happened, which is a mistake, it just happened to be publicized, right? We happen to be living in a world where everything that you fucking do now is shown and seen, okay? There's been plenty of people who have done much worse back in the day, and it's never been seen before. The issue that I had with that is everyone is saying, oh my God, I put this faith in you. You are a role model to my kids and the community. And I'm like, well, did Tiger choose that? Did he choose to be a role model, or did you make him a role model? Because if you're the one who made him that person, then that's your issue. You know what I mean? Well, he's a man.
Well, first of all, I think all those people are full of shit because, listen, these people ain't going out there telling their kids that Tiger's their role model. We mm-hmm. want to see Tiger. And listen, no disrespect to Jack Nicklaus, who's amazing. Mm-hmm. I think Tiger's the greatest golfer who ever lived. Mm-hmm. I want to see Tiger Woods play golf. Mm-hmm. I don't care anything about his personal life because, like you said, I know there are some guys and who done some things in their personal life, but I don't turn on my TV to worry about guys' personal life. I turn on to see Tiger play golf. Mm-hmm. That's all I care about. And like I say, it's interesting because, listen, when you watch certain sports, you've seen, and the NFL is probably at the top of the food chain, but they got guys out there who kill people, who beat the hell out of women, and we just like, oh, they got a lot of talent. Let's give them another chance. So I don't really get caught up into the BS like, you are my role model. Like, no, man, we put guys out there who can win. Mm-hmm. That's what sports are about, winning. There's never a reason to hit a woman, ever. Like I said, we've got guys out there who undid vehicular homicide. We give them second and third chances, and that's just the way this thing works. Mm-hmm. You look at college football, a guy screws up at one school, you're going to see him at another school the next year.
Yeah.
So I hate when people out here try to act like, well, you're supposed to be raising our kids. No, first of all, you're supposed to be raising your kid. Give me a break.
Can I talk about DrinkWorks?
Yeah, let's talk about DrinkWorks because you've set yours up, haven't you?
I have set it up. The beauty of DrinkWorks in this machine is it's convenient. You choose whatever drink you want. They come in pods. It's like a coffee machine. There's no messiness to it at all. Mm-hmm. Flavors and variety for everybody. And the quality is beyond reproach. And I say all this because it's got me so excited because my wife is notorious for ordering a margarita at a restaurant or a bar, and there mm-hmm. is no way she will drink more than three sips of it, no matter how she describes how she wants it to a bartender, no matter how great the bartender says he makes a margarita, she sends it right back or she just pawns it off on me. She had a margarita out of the DrinkWorks machine, and she loved it. So I just personally can't give it a better stamp of approval than saying my wife loved the margarita that we made in like 5 seconds out of
Well, how great is that? I mean, you push a button and you have a cocktail, you know? I mean, it's pretty amazing. There's mixed drinks. They've got sangria. They've got rosé spritzers. What else do they have?
They just came out with Jack Daniel's lemonade, which is going to be amazing. So for our listeners, they've already taken $100 off the price, and now they'll even throw in free shipping. It's the best deal that they're offering anywhere, and it's for a limited time So you can't wait around. Just go, you just check it out. Go to drinkworks.com. That's DRINKWORKS.com. You don't use a code. The best deal's already included. Drinkworks.com. And as we always say, please enjoy responsibly.
So I was lucky enough to marry a woman whose dad has been in life insurance for 45 years. So I knew nothing about it. I was educated by my father-in-law, and now I have life insurance. Policy Genius, on the other hand, makes shopping for life insurance extremely easy. It can answer a lot of questions. How much coverage do you need? Which insurance company is the best one for you? How much should it even cost? And at a time when it's more important than ever to have life insurance, the pandemic is making it a little more complicated to shop for it. That's where Policy Genius can help. As a life insurance marketplace backed by a team of experts, Policy Genius is keeping track of all the changes in the market so you don't have to. They'll find you the right amount of coverage at the best possible price without the headache.
Yeah, so what you're saying is Policy Genius compares quotes from the top life insurance companies in one place. So you don't have to do any shopping around. It takes just a few minutes. It doesn't just save you a lot of legwork. You can save $1,500 or more a year by using Policy Genius to make those comparisons. So once you apply, Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork, all the red tape for free. So if you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they'll be there to take care of everything.
So if you need life insurance, but you're not sure where to start, head to policygenius.com. Policy Genius will find you the best rate and handle the process completely. They'll get you and your family protected and hopefully give you one less thing to worry about. Try it today. What about growing up? You know, what was that like? Did you have brothers and sisters? What was that household like? You know, what was your dad like? If we are doing a podcast called Daddy Issues.
Well, you know, Oliver, it was really me and my dad. We are friends and cordial today. My dad was never in my life growing up. And one of the reasons I really, really want to be a good father to my, I got one daughter and she's the most important thing. I really want to be a good father because my dad wasn't there. I was raised by a single mom. I had three brothers. Two of my brothers have passed away. And my mom worked in, my grandmother, I was raised by my mother and grandmother. My mom worked in a meat, my mom was a maid. My grandmother worked in a meat factory and they did the best they could. We didn't, I didn't realize we were poor because I'm from a small town, Leeds, Alabama, and nobody else has got anything there. So I don't even realize I'm poor. Off the top of my head, I don't even remember when I realized like, oh man, we're poor. Because like I say, I'm in a small town with a couple thousand people and I don't realize we don't have anything. My mom and grandmother did a fantastic job. I mean, they made sure when I first got good at basketball, they made sure I got the one pair of shoes and they did come into the locker room right after the game, but they had to last me the whole season at one pair. But I didn't know I was poor. But I think one of the reasons we have struggled in the Black community is I thought it was normal not to have a dad at home. It's not normal. It's not normal. Like I say, I can count on one hand how many of us had a mom and dad at home, and it has really hurt our community. And we got to do much better. We got to do much better being fathers, a lot better.
Was your dad ever in your life? I mean, or did he leave early, or was he just never there?
He left early, and he was never there. And like I say, we are cordial because we connected once I was in the NBA. And at that point, I didn't need a daddy or a father. But I love my dad. We're at peace with each other or what happened. I have forgiven him for not being there. So I'll tell you a story. Man, I used to be an angry dude. You know, Buck, thank you for the kind words. And I try to be nice to everybody who comes up to me. But there was a time I was an asshole. And so most people don't even know that I sucked at basketball until I was a senior. I grew from 5'10 to 6'5 in 1 year. Whoa. And got really, really good at basketball. So a couple things happened. Number one, I was really angry at my dad because we, at this point, I know we poor. We living in the projects, and I'm thinking, I just got to go to college and get an education to make our lives better. I'm not even thinking basketball at the time. I'm a 5'10" chubby backup point guard. There's not a lot of scholarship offers for those guys, but for some reason, I grew and got really good. So my senior year, because I had never got a letter to go to college offer until my senior year. I had not gotten an offer until my senior year. So then I started getting offers. I was going to stay close to home, Alabama, Auburn, and UAB, because I'm really close with my mother and grandmother. So I picked Auburn, a great decision, love my college. So then I get to the NBA, but my senior year, we get upset in the state championship game, and I go into a deep funk, and I am so out of it. I flunked Spanish, so I didn't get to March. Mm. So when I get to the NBA, I'm starting to have success, and then I get to the NBA, and I'm like, okay, I made it. Now I'm going to stick it up. Everybody asked who ever screwed me in my life. So there was two people on my hit parade, well, three people. My dad. Every time I played a basketball game, I would say to myself, I'm going to just stick to my dad for making our life miserable. Then there was Miss Gomez, who was the sweetest teacher in the world, but I was angry because I flunked Spanish and didn't get to March. And the third was everybody I went to high school with who laughed at me when I didn't get to March. So I had to go to summer school to take Spanish for 3 weeks, and then I went to college. So after 3 years of college, you know, I went to the NBA. And, man, I was so angry when I played basketball. So I was trying to stick to my dad, Ms. Gomez, and all my college, my high school team classmates. And finally, one night, I went over the edge when I spit. And I remember it like it was yesterday, because I think about it all the time about, man, if you do something really, really stupid, like it's humiliating, embarrassing, and there's nothing you can do about it when everybody in the world hates you.
But just to interject, just so people know what you're talking about, some fan was heckling you. You're already angry, as you said. You went over during the game and spit at that
yes.
fan, but the spit predominantly landed on some little girl, right?
Yes, 100%. And I got suspended, rightfully so. But when I was sitting by myself, I was, you know how when you do something really stupid and you're sitting by yourself and you're like, how in the hell did I get here? How in the hell did I get stuck? My team is playing. Everybody in the world is talking bad about me, rightfully so. How can you be such an idiot and a moron? And that night, I stayed up all night, and I said, okay, your dad wasn't there. Let that shit go. Miss Gomez didn't flunk Spanish. You flunked Spanish. Let that go. And then I said, hey, those kids were laughing at you and making fun of you for not graduating because that's what kids do. Let that go. And now I think that was like my third year in the NBA, maybe my fourth, somewhere in there. And from that day on, I said, you know what? I'm just going to play basketball to be good for me, just for me, and do the best I can. And I ain't going to walk around angry like an asshole all the time because stuff that happened in my childhood. And so that point, Buck, what you said, like anybody take the time to come say hello to me, I'm always be cordial and open to them. But man, that was a time I was like, I was mad at the world on stupid shit I did. Like the thing with my dad is a little bit different, but the teacher didn't flunk me. I flunked myself. And, but I, you know, it's like, man, one thing about life, this thing is a learning experience for all of us. The answer to the test.
But you had to be able to turn it on and off. Right. I mean, you had to live your life. You had to be a happier guy. You had to let all that stuff go. But on the court, you had to find some sort of motivation to be the size you were,
yeah,
to do what you did on the basketball court, to use your strength, to use your agility as a big guy, whatever it took to get the rebound, to get inside, to make stuff happen. So you had to be able to separate those two, right?
Yeah, but you know, you heard the phrase getting in your own way. A lot of players get in their own way because to play sports, you got to be totally relaxed. You can't have no other stuff going on in your head because sports are hard enough. I immediately became a better player because I didn't have all those demons in my damn head.
Mm-hmm.
When you turn the noise off, like, man, life is a lot easier to be successful. Like, and this goes for everybody because everybody got noise.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person got noise going on somewhere in their head. Like somebody, you know, whether it's a relationship with mom and dad, with their kids, with their brothers and sisters, or work people. Like everybody's got some noise going on. The key is how do you quiet the noise and just do your job? So I actually immediately felt like a better player because I had turned all the noise off in my head.
Yeah, and I guess turning that noise off, though, you know, there's a lot of forgiveness when, you know, forgiveness is, it helps in turning that noise off. You know, I mean, my dad left when I was 6 or 7. Kurt came into my life. I had an amazing male role model in my life,
yeah,
but only in the last 2 or 3 years have I truly forgiven my father, and it lifted,
yes,
something for me for sure. I'm beginning to have some texting conversations with him. Things are getting, you know, not, I would never say back on track because there really never was a track, but there is communication happening. But I have so much forgiveness for him because of his story. Like, was there a time when you had that moment of forgiving your dad, and how did you even do that? How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, actually, it was a friend of mine. He said he had known the strain in my relationship with my dad because he's one of the few people I talked to about it. Because I got mad at my dad again because, you know, he left when I was poor and we reconciled when I was Charles Barkley. And then he wanted to be like, I'm Charles Barkley's dad. I'm like, ho, slow your roll. Like, no, it's not going to work like that. So I got mad all over again.
Mm.
And then one of my friends says, hey, man, and this is like another 5 or 6 years down the line. He says, hey, you have to remember something. You're too old to have a dad or a father, however you want to phrase it. But you need to be friends with your dad. Because he said, man, when my dad died, I don't have any more Father's Days.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? He says, you know, once your dad died, you don't have any more Father's Days. And I was like, wow, that's very interesting. Because I know it now because when my mom passed away a couple years ago, I don't have Mother's Day anymore. Mm-hmm. And it always stings a little bit. So I had to make that decision with my dad. Like, hey, listen, man, all the stuff, we can't do anything about any of the stuff that happened in the past.
Mm.
But let's be friends and cordial because you're the only dad I'm ever going to have. And since that point, you know, we've been cordial. I got love for him. I don't feel animosity or anger toward him anymore. But like I say, I wanted to, like, you're only going to get one.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. He's made me a better dad.
Because you want to do the opposite of what he did.
100%.
Charles, this is it's the same thing. Like, when my dad left, I could have gone 2 different ways, right? Because my dad's dad left him in the middle of the night when my dad was 5 years old. So my dad just repeated that pattern. When I was in my teens and early 20s, I was like, I am never going to be like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I can imagine it was probably similar. It was like, fuck that. Like, I will not be this to my kids.
Well, so you know, what you said is so interesting is because that's one thing that bothers me when people talk about poor people. Because being a product of your environment is a really big deal. Not to get all philosophical between your dad and his dad,
no.
But that had to have some effect upon him. So I always tell people, I don't judge people from bad environments and things like that because they just don't know any better. Mm-hmm. They just don't. Like I was telling you earlier, like when I, before I got to be older and mature, like, wait, y'all got moms and dads? Like when I was in high school in a small town, like nobody had moms and dads. And all the girls were pregnant in high school. And I was like, yeah, it's no big deal. They're like, Charles, you do know girls are not supposed to be pregnant in high school. I'm like, I don't, wait a minute, what do you mean? They're like, that's not normal. And I had to take a step back. I'm like, oh, I had to really be careful judging people because those kids are, that's how they were raised and they just don't know any better. We are a product of our environment. So that's why I always, when I meet somebody and they're struggling or got some things going on, like you got to listen to them. Like, hey, let me hear your story. And that might explain some of the stupid shit they've done in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, interestingly enough, Buck and I have gotten some comments. You know, the negative comments we get for doing this show is, oh, who the fuck are you to sort of talk about any struggles that you've had growing up? You know, you grew up privileged, you grew up with money, you grew up with your parents being famous. And I never respond to comments, really, but this one person wrote me something and I just felt compelled to. And I wrote him, you know, a pretty decent sized little email explaining that, look, did I get lucky? For sure. But my problems, you know, my issues growing up are mine and they are affecting me in a certain way. It doesn't matter where I come from. This is my emotional scarring, my baggage to deal with. You know what I mean? My pain is just as relevant. You know, just because I came from a better spot and I had more advantages in life, that doesn't detract from whatever emotional pain that I've been through or physical pain that I've been through in my life.
But Oliver, I go through the same thing. Like when I try to talk about black issues, you know, because all the black celebrities, when we try to talk about black issues, we get, well, what do they know about being black? They're rich and they're famous. So that goes back earlier to when we're talking with Buck. It's kind of a double-edged sword. Like, if you know, they say, well, Michael Jordan don't say anything. Yeah, when he said things, y'all going to say, well, what does Michael Jordan know about being black? I says, that's why you can never get caught up in the bullshit. I actually think what you guys doing is awesome and fantastic. And for that, wait, are you not supposed, just because you grew up in having a great life, you're not supposed to talk about anything?
Yeah.
I mean, so that's why that goes back to what Buck asked me again. Like, yo, man, I don't give a fuck what all these people think. I'm going to do the best I can with the things at my disposal. And when somebody says, hey, Charles Berger, you don't know anything about being black. I said, well, first of all, I was actually black and poor at one point. Mm-hmm. But you're the same group of assholes who say, wait, these guys never stand up for anything. So which is it? You want me to stand up or you want me to shut the hell up? It can't be both. It's got to be A or B. It can't be A and B. So,
but now as a guy, Charles, as a guy is what are you, 57 years old, somewhere in there? You have to look back with all of your life experience and go, okay, not only did my dad walk out, you had a stepfather who was killed. So you have two male theoretical role models that are taken out of your life. You have this hardworking mom, this angelic grandmother who you said was the closest person in your life, and something was instilled in you that drove you to where you sit today. And that's what I would imagine, that while people are taking shots, you know, at some point you turn off and you go, how dare you? I mean, I, you know, for you and Oliver, and I can never say this, but for you to get out of Leeds, Alabama, whether it's basketball or anything else, for what you've done in the community, you've hosted SNL multiple times, you're on TNT, you're a Hall of Fame basketball player, you're loved, you're beloved by anybody that meets you. You have had something put in you, and that's my question. Where do you think that comes from, that drive? What was different about you? Forget that you grew. I don't care. A lot of people grow. What was different in Charles Barkley going into his senior year that drove you on to college, that drove you to be the pro that you were, even as a small-ish dude up front in the NBA, to be a top 50 all-time player? Where did that come from?
You know, you guys both know this. Man, there's so many people you meet along the way. I can go back to high school, junior high, and there was bums in the neighborhood who would say great things to me about, yo, man, get out of here. Don't be doing that. My high school principal said to me one time, why are you hanging out with these fools? You got potential. Jerry Oxford was his name. He said to me one day, he said, son, why are you hanging out with these fools? Now, this is even before I was good at basketball. He says, you're a nice kid, but you just want to fit in, right? Don't be hanging out with these fools. And that meant a great deal to me. You know, when I went to college, you know, my coach was awesome, Sonny Smith. One of my teammates, even to this day, Greg Turner. And actually, probably the most important person in my life is Moses Malone. Mm. Moses is, you know, I'll never forget our conversation. I asked Moses, could I come up to his penthouse? We lived in the same building. And I said, Moses, can I come up to your penthouse tonight and talk? I want to talk to you. He says, sure, big fellow, you can. And I said, Moses, why am I not getting a play? And to quote the great Moses Malone, you fat and you lazy. And I'm like, what? He says, Charles, you fat and you lazy. And it hurt like hell, number one. But he says, sit down. He says, you weigh 295 pounds. You can't play. Because I played about between 295 and 300 pounds in college. And obviously, I had success. I was the number five pick in the draft. But Moses said to me, son, you can't play at 300 pounds in the NBA. And at this point, he's already a Hall of Famer. He said, Charles, you got to get in shape because you can't work hard because you're not in shape. And this guy, he says, I'll meet you before practice, after practice. He did that. He said, let's lose 10 pounds. I get to 290. He said, let's lose 10 more. I get to 280. Now I'm starting to get to play. Mm. He gets me to 270, 260, and 250. And that's what I played my whole career. But this guy, if he had told me, if he said, hey, man, I'm at the end of my career. I ain't got time for your shit. You're a young kid. My life would be totally different.
Wow.
And for him to take the time to meet me before practice, after practice, and let me lose 50 pounds, it was really the best thing ever happened to me as a professional.
Have you ever paid that forward in your life? Have you ever been that guy for someone else?
I've always been that guy for any guy, going back to Oliver Miller, Cuttino Mobley, Steve Francis. And listen, every guy don't listen. I don't want to act like that. A lot of these guys don't listen.
Yeah, I was going to say, right. You still had to want to lose weight. You still had to want to do it. It doesn't matter what Moses said.
Yeah, there was no cool sculpting back then.
Yeah, that's no cool sculpting. But let me tell you something, though. I have tried to help younger guys, and they told me to get the fuck out of their face. That I'm, you know, because anytime you, like, it's kind of like us with our kids. They think that we're just old people. We never been through anything in our life.
Yeah,
they don't realize, like, hey, you know, your dad's actually done some crazy shit in his life.
Yeah,
all this stuff ain't new. Now there's more of it, but all this stuff, I've been around it.
Dude, I'm going through that shit right now with my son. He's 13. He's going through puberty. His hormones are starting to come up, and it's a whole new experience for me. He is challenging me as if I don't know shit, and I look at him, I'm like, Wilder, what are you doing, man? I'm 43. I know way more than you do, you little dick.
Hey, so my daughter, first of all, shout out to my daughter, just got engaged. I'm really proud of her.
Congratulations. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Do we like him? Do we love the kid? Is he great?
He's a great kid. I love the kid. My daughter went to Villanova and Columbia. So I think she's pretty smart, and she picked a really good one.
Good.
But we used to fight sometimes because she was great till she got about 16 and 17, and then she developed a wise, I call them. You know, like up until then, we said do something. She just did it. And then she met some friends in high school, and no matter what we said, she's like, "Dad, why?" I said, "Excuse me?" I says, "I need you to do something." She says, "Why?" I says, "Cause I fucking said so."
Exactly.
What do you mean, why? Like, no. We're not gonna worry about little Jimmy and little Cindy what they say at their parents' house. Yeah. No. When I tell you to do something, you don't say why. This ain't the why household. If me and your mom tell you something to do, you do it. Mm-hmm. I want to hear that why shit. Why? Because you live here. Why? Because we pay all your bills. We ain't going to ask you to go run a marathon. When we say do something, you do it. And then they go to college and they come back. But, man, when they go through that high school stage where they question everything.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, we need to sit down and talk. I said, hey, I'm an old man now, but I've been through what you're going through. My job is your dad to don't let you make any stupid mistakes. I'm not trying to be the bad parent or the good parent. My job is to get you ready for the real world. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some of these fools make bad, stupid decisions, and I don't want you to do that. And I think she understands it now, but man, those last couple of years of high school, I was like, hey, this is not working for me.
Athletic Greens. I just guzzled my 100,000th Athletic Greens. I love it so much. I wake up in the morning. I go downstairs before the kids or even my wife is awake. I put my scoop of Athletic Greens into my shaker. I shake it up and I down it and boom. I have just put into my body a complex blend of 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients. Okay, I am ready for the day. It took about a week for me. I know you're into this too, Joe, but it took about a week or two for me, and I actually started to feel real, real benefits. I had energy. It addressed my gut issues.
Do you find that you're making better poopies?
Yeah. Yeah, my poopies are green. You know, I will say that. They're athletic too. So
You know what I love about it is I don't get tired of it.
No, I know.
The simplest part of it is not only am I getting all the 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, but I'm actually slugging down a canister of water, which is, you know, it sounds simple, but because it's in there, I've started my day the best possible way.
It's gluten-free. If you eat keto, paleo, vegan, it's dairy-free, all of it. It's 1 gram of sugar. That's the other thing that's great. But it tastes good. I mean, it actually tastes good. I slam it, but it still tastes really, really good. Whether you're looking to boost your energy levels, support your immune system, or address gut health, now is a perfect time to try Athletic Greens for yourself. Simply visit athleticgreens.com/daddyissues to claim our special offer of 20 free daily travel packs with your first purchase, a $79 added value. Those travel packs are actually really, really great. I'm going on a RV trip leaving tomorrow, actually, and I'm bringing my travel packs. So
yay!
Yeah.
I just
wanted everybody to know that. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/daddyissues. All in one nutrition and 75 highly absorbable ingredients. How did you deal with your daughter dating? Like when she first started dating? I mean, as a dad, were you cool with everyone?
I was not good at all.
No.
I was awful. I got yelled at every single night because this is what I would do, Oliver. When a young man came over, I would say, hey, I'm Charles. I'm Christiana's father. Welcome to my house. Welcome anytime. And then I would leave. And then they would yell at me like, are you going to be friendly and hang out? I'm like, no, I'm not going to be friendly and hang out. I said, when you get serious with a kid, I'm not going to meet every little doofus you bring to my house and sit around and have dinner with him and go in the backyard and play basketball with him. When you find the right one, we can do that. But just because you're bringing some 16-year-old kid over here who you ain't never going to see again, more than likely, I'm not going to be friendly to every kid you bring home. That's just not going to happen.
Now, did you ever, but you know, you are Charles Barkley, right? And you know, I had to deal with this a little bit because my parents were who they were.
Yeah.
You have, your daughter probably has a very keen understanding of when people are being truthful and genuine and authentic or when they're after something. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, how many dudes were like, oh man, Charles Barkley is her dad. You know, I'm going to be into her. Or did you have to look out for that?
Well, I just told her, I said, listen, you're my daughter. You're all I care about. You make sure they respect you. You make sure they respect you. And I said, the number one thing I want for you is, I said, you're going to go to college. You're not going to be anybody's wife. You're going to make sure if no man ever going to treat you bad, you're going to be able to take care of yourself. I said, you know, a lot of women get treated bad because the man makes all the money and the women don't, you know, they don't have their own life and own careers. I said, my job, I said, you're going to go to Villanova. That's where she wanted to go. And I said, you're going to go to Columbia. You're going to have a great job. Now, if you meet a man, we're good. But you make sure that he treats you great. I said, you're my daughter. You're going to get treated great, period. But when they would come over, I say, I didn't want to get friendly with any of them. I mean, because how many people actually get serious with somebody? Because I always say, I said, Christiana, these guys, you're going to college. Y'all ain't going to the same college. I said, so these guys you bringing over here in high school, I'm not going to be friendly to them. I hope you never see them again till later in life when they're successful. But I said, but these guys, like I said, I'm not even big on dating in high school. I mean, I'm like, wait a minute. Because we all going to go separate ways, hopefully, when we graduate. I hope everybody's successful. But let's meet up after we're successful. Let's don't meet while we're still living with our parents and ain't got no job.
And you guys have an open, pretty open relationship. She can tell you everything. What is just, there's things that you that she just closes off about?
Like Charles just did.
Like he just got quiet. I'm almost asking like for myself because, you know, again, with my oldest, even my boy, I'm finding that he's sort of closing down just a little bit where I'm like, dude, what are you thinking? What's in your mind right now? Talk to me. I'm the man you should be talking to right now.
Well, first of all, I think that's a great point you just said. Like I text her, I call her all the time going back years. I mean, she's 31 now. She just turned 31. I says, you can tell me anything, good or bad. Anything good or bad. And it was so funny, Oliver, one time, and she's really a sweet person. So one time she's on spring break with a bunch of girls. I think she's like 20, and some TMZ busted her drinking with her girlfriends at a bar. So I got a call from a friend of mine in the police department giving me a heads up.
See, that's the so fucked up about the world we live in today.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
Go ahead.
Her and her girlfriend, they were kissing each other and drinking a bottle of Georgie, you know, the vodka with the handle.
Yeah.
And they were on spring break somewhere. I don't even remember. That's how long ago it was. So one of my police friends who was monitoring the internet said, hey, they're doing this story on your daughter. I just want you to know in advance. So I text her. I said, go to your room and call me, please. She said, Dad, what's going on? I said, Christiana, this is what's going to happen right now. Somebody's following you down wherever you're at. They took a bunch of pictures with you and your girlfriends. Y'all were kissing, like, you know, college girls kissing and drinking a bottle of vodka. And she just started screaming, crying. I said, stop crying. We don't cry in the Barkley household. And people say, when somebody say bad things about you. She said, Dad, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. I said, calm down, Christiana. I said, you're a young kid on spring break. I'm not going to yell and scream at you. And I said, hey, that's the double standard. It ain't right. It ain't wrong. But when you're in the limelight, there's a double standard. You have to take the good with the bad. I tell guys that all the time. Yo, man, you don't get to be famous and make all that money when you do something stupid or like you have to get some bad stuff happen. That's the way this thing works. I said, I'm a little disappointed in you, though, for drinking Georgia vodka.
You're better than that, kid.
I said, you're better than that. I said, anytime your vodka comes in a pitcher, like milk or something like that, and it's really cheap, I said, don't be drinking Georgia vodka. If you need some more money on spring break, just call me. I'll send you some.
I think as you tell that story, I'm wondering if, you know, obviously any kid who gets that call from her dad is thinking that she disappointed dad. And I'm assuming you called her because you were thinking about her. You weren't thinking about how it really reflected on you. You know, there's a distinction there.
Well, you're 100% correct. I was actually just really worried about her.
Right.
Listen. That's now, if she had been doing something crazy, like, I'll tell you another funny story. We went to Vegas for her 21st birthday. I took about her and a bunch of her girlfriends. And she had just turned 21, and I ordered a bunch of shots. She had about 7 or 8 girlfriends with her. And I said, this is so awesome. Your dad going to be with you the first time you have a drink. And all 8 of the girls... almost spit there. I said, listen, I'm not a moron. We're parents. We're not morons. The notion that our kids are not going to drink when they go away to college, I'm not like that. I don't want them drinking and driving. I don't want them being separated. I say, hey, don't ever leave a place by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Ever, ever. Things like that. But I says, the notion that all these parents think, well, my kid, she's my sweet little Annie Mae, that she's at college and she's not having fun and things like that, and my sweet little Bobby is at college and he's not partying and having fun. I said, come on, man. Yeah. That's not the world we live in. I tell my daughter, hey, just be safe and careful. That's all you can do. That's all you can do, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oliver's not there yet. I'm there kind of with my daughters being 24 and 21. There's just nothing better than getting to the other side of it and being able to look at your kids as adults and being able to have kind of a conversation on an even playing field, even though we always know it's not. They're always going to be, you know, your little girl and my girls are always going to be daddy's little girls. But when they get to a certain age and you start to see the real choices they make for life and you're proud of those choices, like you just had this engagement. I mean, there's just nothing, there's no feeling like that in life.
Well,
I think,
you know, Buck, what's so interesting about that, when we would have those private conversations, going back when she's 16, 17, I said, this is my goal for you. This is my goal for you. I says, I want to get you through college, not pregnant, mm-hmm. not in jail, and a great education. At that point, you should have some common sense. So what you just said, like, because once they get out of college, like, you're not a kid anymore. You're like a young adult. And I said, Christiana, my goals for you are very simple. Don't be pregnant. Don't be in jail. Get a great education. At that point, you're going to always be my little girl, but you're going to be an adult. So what you said is so important. Like, hey, I can't even tell you to come home at a certain time once you're 24 years old. I mean, you're 16 and 17. I'm like, no, you better be home before midnight.
Mm-hmm.
But then once they go away to college, Ashley, and she had to call when she went out in college, she had to let me know when she got home. I'm like, hey, listen. No disrespect. You go out and have fun. Don't go to bed without letting us know you got home safe.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just such a different time too, man, because when I was in college, there was no cell phones, and you know, even in high school, there's no cell phones. So you're sort of just on your own. My parents never needed to know when I came home. You know, it wasn't even a thing. It was not as accessible as it is today. You know,
well, but you know, Oliver, I don't know if crazy shit happened when we were younger, but like every night you turn on the TV, like once or twice a week, you see some crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like last year, well, it was probably a couple of years ago when this young lady got in the wrong Uber and this guy killed her. And I'm like, damn, man.
Yeah.
Like it can be over that quickly.
Yeah.
Like she got in the wrong Uber. And this crazy ass dude killed her. And I was like, man, that is so, I felt so bad for the parents. You send your kids away to school. And I told her, I said, yo, don't you ever leave a bar. Y'all come together, you leave together. Don't ever leave by yourself. I mean, and that's really all you can do.
Yeah. And I think too, nowadays, I think kids are a little bit more aware of all of that as well. You know, I mean,
But there's still just a lot of crazy out there.
Oh God, it's scary, man.
But they had to have always been there. We just weren't aware of them because there wasn't, you know, there was no New York Post app or whatever to deliver to your phone that, you know, some psycho just went off. I mean, those people just probably lived in anonymity and probably in some ways got away with stuff that that we weren't ever aware of.
Hey, Charles, growing up, did you have a male influence in your life? I know your dad was gone and then, you know, your stepdad died. I mean, was there someone who you looked up to?
I had two great grandfathers who were great, who did the best they could. My dad's dad was a great grandfather and my grandmother's husband was a great grandfather. But, you know, Oliver, one thing that really helped me a lot growing up in a small town, I tell people, man, growing up in a small town is totally, like, I have no idea, like, you know, Kenny, growing up in New York City, I would not want to grow up in New York City. It's a good city, but, like, we got one street light. Unless you get, we got a Jack's, which is a knockoff McDonald's, and we had a Sonic. Those were the only two restaurants in town. We had no other restaurants in my hometown. And if you didn't get something to eat by 7 o'clock through the week and by 10 o'clock on the weekend, you don't get anything to eat if you want to go out and eat. But I love my hometown because we didn't know. We're about 30 minutes from Birmingham, but we like it could be like it's 30 minutes, but it could be like another planet away. You go K to 12 with the same people. I was very blessed to grow up in a great situation.
Was Leeds predominantly a black town?
No, it's a predominantly white town.
It was. And what was it like growing up just as far as race went, you know, in Alabama in the 60s?
Well, it sucked, number one. It was pretty good in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
But in Birmingham, the year I was born was the year they bombed the church.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody know that famous story about the four little girls where the Klan blew up to burn the church. You had the Montgomery boycott going on. You had the Selma massacre. So I didn't learn about this stuff till I got older. But like it clearly, I'm glad we didn't even know that stuff. Number one, I was young, but I don't think it was really happening in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am appreciative of that, not to have those pressures growing up. But listen, the South has a long way to go when it comes to race relations, a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unfortunate that we're so far behind the rest of the world. I mean, we're still arguing over Confederate statues and the Confederate flag in 2020, which is silly and ridiculous. Crazy. Like I say, they were bombing churches the year I was born, 57 years ago. And, you know, Ali had a Ali's one of my heroes, and he had a great saying. He says, if you're the same person at 50 you were at 20, you're wasting 30 years of your life.
That's great.
And for us to be dealing with all this racial BS 57 years later, I really think we really missed a great opportunity to make the world a better place.
Do you think we have another opportunity right now? I mean, do you feel like there's a more of a shift of consciousness, and this isn't just going to sort of go away right now?
I think it's a great opportunity, but we need to shut the hell up and do some actions.
Yeah.
Right now, we got a lot of people yelling and screaming. Nothing gets accomplished with yelling and screaming. Number one, I think, listen, I'm going to always defend the cops. Because I think if it wasn't for the cops, we'd be living in the wild, wild west. Now, that does not mean I want them out there killing unarmed black men. That can't happen. It's a shame what happened to Mr. Floyd. That cannot happen. To see a man die like that was painful as a black man for me. But to hear these fools on television talking about let's get rid of the cops, let's defund the cops and things like that, first of all, that's stupid and asinine. Because number one, they're not going to do that in the good neighborhoods. They're only going to do that in the poor black neighborhoods and the poor white neighborhoods to find the cops. As who are they supposed to call? Ghostbusters? Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, man. That's silly. We do need police reform. It's a tough job. Only certain people can handle that type of pressure. But we need police reform because we need the cops. Because, you know, it's a lot of people out here who ain't got pure hearts. But like I say, obviously I don't want them out there killing unarmed black men or white men. And that's another part of the story. That's a bit more unarmed white people killed than black people. But this just not, it's just a crazy time. We're talking about this and we should be talking about it. But it's just some guys out there who shouldn't be cops, but we need the cops.
What do you think, this is a weird question, but what do you think the biggest problem with what's happening right now, meaning not the like sort of the systemic, the idea of systemic racism, but what do you think the problem is with this movement right now? Like what needs to be, how does it need to be streamlined?
Well, I think the problem now is, I think that speaking as a black person, we need allies. I think we're crossing over to alienating at this point. We need allies, but I think because if you just keep taking, everybody has a natural emotion like, hey, I'm not just going to let you take everything. So I think me and I don't speak for all black people. I think we need to take a deep breath and say, hey, we need y'all to work with us. And I'm concerned that we're pushing so hard, we're going to alienate instead of looking for allies, which those are two words are totally different, like on a whole nother planet. There's a difference between having somebody as an ally or alienating them. So I wish me and the rest of the black people would take a step back and say, hey, guys, because Oliver and you, Buck, y'all had nothing to do with this shit that started 400 years ago. I mean, this is something that started 400 years ago, and we're not going to fix it in 2 months. But we need to work together. And that's the one thing I try to tell the guys. Like, guys, y'all are mad at people who are 40. You're 43? I said, man, Oliver's 43. He ain't have shit to do with all this shit that happened 400 years ago. But we need him as an ally instead of saying, yo, we're mad at you just because you're white. Like, yo, man, I'm not in this shit. Well, yeah, you are. I'm like, no, we need allies. I don't want to alienate anybody. Anybody who wants to help, I'm all in. And then like I said, and also, I challenge my black friends. Yo, man, what the fuck are you doing? Like, because you got to clean up your own house first before you going out here name calling, throwing rocks and things like that. Like, what are you doing to help your own community? I yeah, we do have systematic racism, always have, always will. But you can't do, I know this as a black person, I can't do stupid shit, then say, it's systematic racism. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you don't get to do that. Like, it's up to me to help my community. And then I'm saying, hey, I need some help from you guys. But first thing I got to do is help myself.
Mm-hmm. Let me, is there anything as we wind down, is there anything you've said ever? I mean, I know these are all, you got to navigate your way through this conversation. We all do. And we all have to be smart about it and try to help make things better. But is there anything that you've ever said, Charles, at TNT, not just about race relations or anything, the TNT said, hey, time out, back up. You know, you gotta watch what you're talking about. Or do they just let you go? They know when they enter into a contract with Charles Barkley, you're going to be yourself, and people can take it or leave it.
Well, I think now they realize there's this notion that I just say shit just for it. Anytime that I'm going to go on something and talk about something serious, I've already had the conversation in my head 10 times. Right. I know what the reaction is going to be. Sometimes I say stuff just to get the conversation started. So I'm always prepared. And TNT has figured out, yo, maybe this dude know what he's talking about. And so I feel really good when I come on anything like, hey, I know I'm going to say this. I know that's going to be blowback, but I wanted to say it. You know, because like right now, I was disappointed how the black players treated Drew Brees. I was very disappointed. They threw him out there to these fools on morning talk shows and the internet. Drew Brees is a great man. Drew Brees worked to get black prisoners in Louisiana the right to vote again. Nobody talked about that. Drew Brees had just written a check for $5 million to black families at food banks in New Orleans. So Drew's track record speaks for itself. And for them to overreact to what he said about the flag, I was disappointed. They could have picked up the phone and said, hey, Drew, we need to talk about your statements. But when you turn this stuff over to these fools on morning radio, talk shows, and the internet, which is where every loser goes to live, because I tell people who mean on the internet, they live with their parents, they sit around in their pajamas all day, and they're not doing shit. They just want to comment on other people who are out here being successful or trying to do some things. That's one of the reasons I don't do social media. Because, listen, man, not blowing smoke, you are one of the best to ever do what you did. One of the best who ever did it.
Thanks.
For people to...
He's talking to me.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That was good, Oliver.
Thank you, Chuck.
for people to say mean things to you, like you really give a rat's ass who win a sporting event, that's just asinine, stupid, and silly. You can say, hey, I don't like this guy, whatever, but if you're mean-spirited, that's where I think you cross the line. And I think that's why I don't do any social media whatsoever. I don't want them people to have access to me. And I'm good with that.
Yeah, you may be a role model. Is that bad news?
That could be bad news.
Well, sorry to break it to you, man.
No, I know.
But
well,
I mean, you're a role model.
Oh, you know what? I got it, dude. The Nike commercial now. You are a role model. There
yes.
you go. You flip it. That would be huge.
With sensible shoes. Forget the high top. Something that's nice to walk around in the house in. Forget the high tops.
No, it's Air Max Ones.
Any Nike shoes y'all need, y'all let me know. I'm still big.
Oh, don't say that. No, don't take that back.
No, Charles, you don't
Oliver's
understand.
Ape shit, right? No. I am
a fiend.
That may be the dumbest thing you've ever said, Charles.
I just watched Tinker's documentary. That guy's what a soulful guy that guy is. Yeah. No, I'm a sneaker head, full on out of my mind.
You know what's so funny? So me and Michael got drafted the same year. And so we go up to Nike, and obviously the rest is history. We're all piggybacking on Michael. And I remember just sitting there and like, yeah, this is cool. You guys are nice. You're going to give us some money to wear some sneakers. And then about 3 or 4 years in, I realized like, holy shit, this is going to be huge. Mm. This is going to be huge. And we owe Michael Jordan a great deal of gratitude because athletes were not doing commercials other than Arnold Palmer. Arnold Palmer started athletes doing commercials, I think. He deserves a lot of credit for that. But Michael getting all these guys' shoes and commercials, man, it's been crazy. But I remember sitting up at Nike in 84. We're like, we're just going to make a couple dollars selling sneakers. And now this dude's got $2 or $3 billion just because of the shoes.
God, it's amazing.
And there's a renaissance now too on shoes, on Jordans especially. You know, it's just been crazy.
Guys that are 43, just so you know, Charles, it makes guys like Oliver that are 43 and kind of like falling into the category now of dorky dad feel cool
to
wear his stupid Nike shoes.
First of all, they're not stupid. There's great stories behind all of them. I have been wearing Jordans since 87. So 88, 89, the threes and the fours. I mean, like, those are my favorites. I definitely am not just a 43-year-old asshole who's just getting into this game.
Hey, you know, Michael is the first person, like, he made shoes look great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he made shoes look, I mean, obviously, not only is he a great basketball player, like, you would never wear sneakers with good outfits until Michael started doing his thing. Like, right. There's Jordans that you can wear with a suit and you look great.
Right. Totally. And I want to thank him for that because, my God, there's nothing better.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? So, talking about Michael, I really enjoyed The Last Dance.
Amazing.
That was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. Incredible.
It brought back some good memories and some bad memories, just for the record.
Does anybody like Isaiah Thomas? I mean, does anybody like him?
I like Isaiah.
Okay.
I do. Like I went Isaiah. To Indiana. He's all we got. He's
it
one
just
of the
seems
few
like nobody still to this day likes Isaiah Thomas.
You know, I think that they did. How about Michael lying on the documentary and the guy breaking out the tape like a month later? He got it on tape that Michael said, oh, and if Isaiah's on the team, I'm not on the team. That was hilarious.
That's right.
But it brought back some great memories, man. And, man, that dude was fucking amazing.
Jesus. It's on another level.
I mean, there's no question, right? There's no question.
No. And, you know, you forget how bad he got beat up by the Pistons the first 3 years. And you're like, that dude went through that. Yeah, he is the greatest. Yeah. The shit he went through. I mean, anybody grew through what he went through those first 3 years before they finally beat the Pistons the fourth time. That was amazing to watch again.
Did you go to Warner Brothers lot and play in that tent?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was a PA on a movie back then. I was trying to get into the movie, you know, I was young. And I would go to the tent and watch all you guys play there. I used to go sit down, and Mike was so cool. I just poked my head in one day, and he's like, come on in. I just get to hang out there and watch you guys ball.
The shit was crazy. Michael calls me. He's like, yo, man, I need you. I'm like, what? What you need me for? I need you in Space Jam. I'm like, yo, man, I'm not going to spend 2 weeks in L.A. not doing shit. He says, oh, no, no. They're billing me a dome. I'm like, what? He said, oh, they're billing me a dome. And we get to fucking L.A. They got stands, a four-court basketball, yeah, and a fucking gym.
Yeah, gym right there.
I'm like, holy shit, you are big time.
There's your answer for coronavirus. I mean, start the NBA back up and have Michael just have people build a dome and let everybody live in it. Have Michael build buildings, hand out shoes.
Has NBA even, I mean, is there a time frame right now? Is there even anything in the works?
Yeah, we're going July the 30th.
So it's happening.
It's happening. You had to let them know by yesterday if you were going to play. Only four players pulled out.
Oh.
So it's scary, though, Oliver, because Florida's on fire right now with this virus.
Yeah.
And we're going to take 22 NBA teams. They're going to take the WNBA. They're going to take the MLS. So it's scary. They say it's going to happen. If these things keep spiking in Florida, I'd be surprised we play if they keep spiking.
Well, I mean, we haven't even started sports, you know, and MLB is supposed to start. It's all supposed to start. And now you're hearing cases just pop up everywhere. I mean, you've got these young 20-year-old kids who are like, fuck it, I'm immune to this, and they're out doing whatever they're doing. I mean, I don't know. This just seems like it could be
it's scary.
A disaster, yeah.
Oh, it's really scary. And I think what scares us the most is five or six of our best players get this shit and it just ruins the playoffs. So,
yeah, then man, it's scary right now. Then you don't have real competition. You know, if people are checked out. Even asymptomatic people can't be around the team for X number of days. And, you know, name the top players. If three of them are out, you know, how legitimate is the playoffs?
Are you going to work from home? Are you going to work? Are you guys all sitting at a desk? What's that looking like?
We haven't decided yet. We're either going to be in the studio and social distance to have fucking plexiglass up, or we're going to do it from home. They haven't made a decision. We got a month before we have to make a final decision.
Yeah.
But it's scary, man. It's scary.
Well, this has been one of the highlights of my year for sure, man.
Me too.
So fun talking to you. I just can't. I could talk for hours.
I know. You never disappoint, and you did this in a pinch. And I texted you yesterday, and your response to me has always been, "Yeah, sure, whatever you need." And that's just the guy you are. That's not when people are looking. I just know that's who you are. So thanks for being on this.
And don't think I'm not going to hit you up for this whole Nike situation. I'm trying to hook up with Reggie Saunders.
You
know, Reggie.
God,
who is that?
He just runs marketing for the Jordan brand. You know, like I've got friends who are much bigger place, like Adam Levine, right? He's a big shoe freak. You know, you know, you've got Dr. Wu. You've got all these people who
have Levine
linked
hook you
up.
Don't go to Charles Barkley. He's about to go back to work. Levine's sitting around writing songs.
I didn't ask. Charles said, if you all need Nikes, it's like, okay, that's it. The door has been cracked open.
Hey, I didn't think you were going to take me up on it. I was just throwing bullshit out there.
Too late, dude.
That's like inviting somebody to a wedding that you know is not going to come, and then they show up.
That's too late. You just better hope Joe doesn't give me your cell phone number. That's all.
Hey, man, I enjoyed this, man. Thank y'all for having me.
You're the
Thank
best.
You, Chuck. You're the best,
You are
man.
The best. Thanks, Charles.
Be safe.
All right, you too, brother.
See ya.
I mean, come on.
Come on.
Now, come on.
Come on now. He's
God.
The best. He's legit the best.
I love him so much, I can't even say it. That is a man that I aspire to be. He just is unafraid. He's smart. He's articulate. And he doesn't give a fuck what you think about him. And to live life like that has to be so liberating. He is a role model.
But he's thought out. He's
he
not
is?
Just,
of course he is. You
he's
know.
Not somebody just throwing anything against the wall. He has a method to what he's saying. There's a reason behind everything he says. And then you can like it, you can not like it, but he's not losing any sleep for the people that don't like it. And he doesn't really care about the people that like it. You know, if you say, oh man, you know, here's what Barkley said, isn't this amazing? He cares as much about that as he cares about the people that say, you know, they don't like it. So on TV in a live sporting arena, forget the incredible career and everything else he's done. I am envious of that, that he has the ability to turn that noise off, be himself, and just say what he means. And and that is really hard and becoming harder and harder to do. Yeah. So my hat's off to him for that. And
no, that's great. I love his advice, too, to the young kids. It's like, you can't think you're going to sail through all this without controversy. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have to learn to take the punches. You know, and that's what he did. And, you know, he has created that for himself, which is so great. I mean, he's created through his career a platform where he can say anything he wants. You know what I mean? He's allowed to do that. Unfortunately, you're not.
Right. He is now a role model. That's the irony of it all.
That's the irony of it all. And by the way, that would be a great Nike commercial. Chuck came back and did I Am a Role Model. Because he is, man. I mean, for many, many different reasons now. You know, it's not about him being a basketball player. And I love that. I love this idea that he's not a role model because there's so many other things to be in life. Don't just look at me and think that this is the only way to get out. You know what I mean?
But he's seen both sides. Both are the far ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, but now he's a role model because he's able to sort of say what he feels and to be unafraid of your opinion. You know, that's important today. So essentially, he is a different kind of role model today than he ever probably imagined. You know, and he probably doesn't even realize.
He doesn't realize, I guarantee you. But when I told my mom yet again, you know, Oliver and I are talking to Charles Barkley today. She's like, oh, I love him. I mean, there are no real boundaries with him in what he says. Mm-hmm. And I think for those who enjoy him and learn from him and listen to him and, you know, he's talking to a lot of different types of people.
Yeah. Wow, man. That was really cool. Well, that was my favorite one, I will say. And, you know, who knows? Maybe I'll get a Nike deal out of this. You never know.
I know. Yeah, I know.
I know. He sort of backpedaled at the end there.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Fucking kidding.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, I got to go see a man about a 30-foot trailer. So.
Yeah. Please don't injure yourself.
I won't.
Daddy Issues is executive produced by Joe Buck, Oliver Hudson, and Sim Sarna for Cloud 10.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch and Matt Sasaki.